Muses of Mythology is a spoiler-heavy podcast.
That's an understatement.
We're going to discuss not just the events of this book, but the Ridenverse as a whole, and really anything that we feel is relevant. You can find full spoiler warnings in the show notes. Loki is free from his change. He's ready... Wait, what's the ship called? Naglfar?
God, I'd have to see it, and then I'd probably be able to remember that. Naglfar.
Naglfar?
Naglfar.
Naglfar?
Naglfar.
Naglfar. Welcome to Muses of Mythology, a podcast where we explore how ancient myths become part of modern pop culture through the lens of Rick Riordan's Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard. This is Story 82, The Ship of the Dead. I'm your co-host and podcasting muse, Darian Smart. Joining me is my co-host and brother, DJ.
How's everybody doing today? I'm DJ the Norn. This time, Verdandi is possessing me.
Which one is that?
Couldn't tell you.
Cool. I guess we'll circle back.
Here's the thing. I looked them up, but I just found the names, and that's about it.
Well, that's a problem for future us. Maybe you know that, or you don't. I don't know. We'll find
Possibly.
Out later.
We'll see.
We're going to muse around the garden real quick. DJ.
What's up?
I went to the museum this month.
Nice.
Yeah, the Boise Art Museum. I go there actually quite often over the summer, usually when I'm working with a summer camp. That's a place where the writing camps like to take the kids. So I end up going there a lot. But this is the first time I've been in a while. And I went with the after school program that I help run through the Parks and Recs department. And you know all this, but the listeners don't. So I'm just setting some context.
Okay.
And we went on the first Thursday of the month, which is free admission day.
First Thursdays.
Yeah. But I thought it was really cool. And the museum itself is very cool. And they change up the art and the exhibits and what they have, like the exhibits and what they bring through there is like very thoughtful and very interesting. So this month, I went ahead and donated to the museum.
Wonderful.
That feels like an organization working to create a positive in the world, especially with the having a day every month that's like free admission to make the art more accessible to the local community.
That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks, DJ.
We donate $1 for every patron we have on Patreon. And so this donation is possible because of you guys. It is absolutely wonderful that we get to do it. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. And now back to the show. Wow, this was the fastest we have ever got through a series.
Well, I wonder why.
I mean, we've only done one beforehand, so. Hey, cards on the table. This may be how we do the Egyptian one, too. I don't know yet.
We'll see.
But for now, Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, Book 3, The Ship of the Dead.
The Ship of the Dead. Darren, do you want to give us a two-minute
recap? No, because it's your turn. Because it's your turn to give the two-minute recap.
You know, I figured I'd give it a try because you did that shit to me before.
Yes, which is why, you can't pull that trick on me. I did that for months.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. How dare you?
Yes, okay. Two-minute recap on Ship of the Dead. Let me pull up my clock. Let me throw up the timer. And go.
So Magnus is hanging out with Percy and Annabeth, giving tips about how to deal with high sea stuff. They go. He meets up with Alex at his uncle's mansion. They find a note saying, get this whetstone. So they go. They go back to – they get on the Big Banana, which is their boat, with all of the Group 19 or Floor 19 fellas.
Yeah.
They meet up. They get sucked into a brewing vat, a mead vat, and then the shenanigans ensue with that guy, because that guy's actually the husband of Ren from the first book.
Yeah, callback!
Yep. They get out of there, and at that time, they also found Blitz and Hearth, so they continue down. They then talk to Nord? Nord?
The Grandpa.
Grandpa, his grandpa.
Grandpa, well, grandpa not Grandpa God. Chase. Grandpa God. God.
Grandpa God. He gives him smooth sailing, which is really nice. So we just end up in Europe.
Yeah, that helped a lot.
Fast forward to Ireland.
Yeah, fast travel. Let's fucking go.
So we get a little bit on Mallory. Mallory is actually the daughter of Frigg.
That was
Frigg?
Cool.
Yeah, Frigg. They go get this mead that is specific. They get this mead. They go back. We get a scene with TJ and another giant, and Alex has to make a clay soldier, and they obviously win. Another giant comes in and tries to fuck shit up. I'm not great at summaries.
Right. I don't know why I put my phone down as if I wasn't like, yeah, typing. You got 15 more seconds.
So they talk to Scotty. Scotty gives them skis to go beat Loki. They beat Loki in a flighting, and then they have a picnic on the battleground at the end, and then everything is hunky-dory.
Everything is hunky-dory. I cried over Jason. Dory. You cried over Jason again.
Yep.
Yep. This is my favorite one.
It's good. It's very
strong. I think of... This might be my favorite, like, Ryan-verse book, honestly.
Bold claim. Yeah. You've got Trials of Apollo right there.
No. And I do like
the Trials of Apollo. Burning Maze right there.
I don't think Burning Maze is my favorite of the three.
I think Burning Maze
Burning Maze. I think my favorite...
It's either Burning Maze or Tower. Either one. Both are very strong.
I like Tyrant's Tomb, largely because Reyna's in there. Apollo spends a lot of the time unconscious, and that's like a thing that just kind of annoys me. And I like that Artemis or Diana shows up in that one. Oh, spoilers for all that. You're checking the show notes by now, right? We just do this. We're going on 4 years. We just do
Charles
this.
Charles Apollo's been out long enough. It's just going to be spoilers. I'm just going to talk about it.
I know. I mean, I like it, but it has the same thing. The biggest thing for me with Trials, and I think Tower of Nero might be my favorite of the books. Yeah, you and I have talked about this. The fact that the status quo remains largely untouched bums me out. And you could argue the same thing for Magnus.
Yeah, but that's just Norse mythology.
But that's Norse mythology is like inherently cemented into a sort of like permanent inevitability. But for Magnus himself, I feel like the choices he made... Like how he took advantage of the gods giving him a gift, and it's the way he, like, you know, Percy does, but it's different, and how he opens the chase space at the end and is trying to, like, help contribute to help, like, unhoused kids in his community. And that ending, that just because Magnus is dead does not mean he can no longer, because he's an Inhari, and he's gone through all these trials, he gets to continue to make an impact on the world. And I like that a lot. I also love stories about friends. And this is all the friends being
friends. And very good.
It makes me happy. This is the most everybody gets a quest.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mentioned that in the last one where it felt so, okay, now we're on a quest. And this one is the same one, but I think it felt better.
Halfborns happens off screen.
That one is so fucking wild to
me. That one fucking sucks.
The Halfborns big damn hero moment is completely off screen.
Off screen. Dude kills a titan all on his lonesome.
Just fucking absolutely berserkers a giant.
But we don't get to see it. We get to hear about it later. And like the talk that we get is a one-sided talk that it's like almost, it's played for laughs. And I'm like, that's kind of rough.
Yeah, I like the talk. Actually, like when Halfborn is talking to Magnus and it's not really a conversation. Magnus is just listening. He's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah. Totally. And it's just Halfborn processing. And I think I like that a lot because we don't get a lot from Halfborn or Mallory or TJ in the previous book. So we get a little bit. But I think it felt very suited to Halfborn where he is actively processing his own thoughts about it and being like, so maybe I thought I didn't want to come back and I had no feelings about it. And then it was back. And in my head, it was always what it was when I left. And seeing how it was totally different, that was kind of hard. And then watching this giant come on and just that he was going to trash the place like it was nothing. Maybe I had feelings about that. And maybe I regret not coming home to my mother. Like, wow, I'm having a lot of emotions. Good talk, Magnus. I'm going to talk to my girlfriend now.
I'm going to talk to my ex. Let's see if we can work shit out.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm here again.
Wonderful.
He's all, and I love Halfborn being bummed out that Mallory didn't get to see any of his heroics because she was in the walnut.
Yeah.
No, that one's weird that we get to be physically present for everyone else's heroics. And I think that's a pacing thing.
Yeah, probably.
Like, because we were elsewhere with Magnus dealing with the problem. And that the problem that Magnus was dealing with was happening simultaneously and directly related. Or the problem that the team was dealing with was because of what had happened up yonder.
Yeah. It's like, I get it, but it sucks.
Yeah. I like the everyone gets their, because it doesn't really just feel like everyone getting a quest to solve like it kind of felt in the last one. It felt like everybody gets their specific spotlight hero moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that does so much to the character's nature and puts their full talents on display. Like everyone got a main character moment. Yeah. And I thought that was rad.
It's a lot of fun.
Did you have a favorite?
It might just be the flighting.
Oh, dude.
Flighting is really strong. That or Mallory Keene's like just trickery.
That was, rock, was so really strong. Good. I liked, we got a lot from Mallory right at the end where it's like, oh, we find out. Because we find out like how, we knew how they had all died. But we knew
she died from a car bomb incident. Turns out she planted it, but also was trying to disarm it because she realized that it was a school bus that was, she thought was full of soldiers.
Yeah, she thought it was going to be a bus that was, she knew it was a school bus. She thought it was being used to transport soldiers, found out, no, it's just a school bus that's going to be transporting kids. And Mallory is like, I can't let that happen.
Yeah.
Because it's during the troubles. It's during the time
because Loki was part of her group goading them into doing this.
Yeah, mass chaos, mass casualties. Because it was the troubles. It was Ireland being like, hey, you know what? Maybe we don't like being under British rule anymore.
it was Ireland.
And things were fucking rough. And then we find out. And so she like dies because she had these knives in her hands. And she was told by this old woman that like, oh, the knives will help you. They'll help you. And so she thought they would help her disarm the bomb. They didn't. So she thought it's been Loki this whole time.
Yeah.
No, it was her mom, Frigg.
It was her mom, Frigg.
Who gave her the knives.
Because they would help her eventually.
Eventually. Those ones specifically. But also it's because she had to die holding weapons in her hands in order for her to go to Valhalla. Yeah. If she had just died trying to disarm the car bomb but didn't have a weapon, that wouldn't have counted.
Yeah.
So she had to get, she was going to die either way. Like she was not going to successfully disarm this bomb. Like whatever happened, she was going to die. Like, I think Frigg saw it, because she talks about how Frigg can see the future, and she tries really hard not to see it too far or see it for her kids, because she can't do much to prevent it.
Yeah.
And we get Baldur's whole...
Yeah, the farther you reach, the more solidified it becomes.
Mm-hmm. So she's like, but I can give you this, and I know you'll need these knives today.
Yeah.
Because they're so sharp and so strong, she's actually able to open a mountain door. But just a crack.
Very, very tiny gap just to see, just to breathe fresh air and see the sky.
Mm-hmm. Because there's, because they're at, okay, hold on. We talked about the mead.
Yep.
It's, Rick does a lot of cool. Here's Norse some stuff. Here's some stuff. Let's weave it all together in this epic. And we're going to, this mead makes, it's like the golden mead.
This mead is made from the blood of a god who is made from the spit of gods.
Was he a god or was he just like a dude?
They said he was a god.
Okay, I missed that. I couldn't figure out whether he was a human they had made or just, okay.
No, it was just like the essentially best. A living peace treaty between humans and giants. Or was it Aesir and Vanir?
I think it was the latter.
Aesir and Vanir. All right.
Yeah. And they're like, look at what we can create when we work together, basically. And this dude was just the best.
Yeah,
he was awesome and helpful.
Yep.
And he got brutally murdered by those dwarves from the first book. Yeah, they were the dwarves, they were those like creepy dwarves from the first book who were like, here, well, they got the boat from them or something, or they got something from them. The twins.
I don't remember the twins from the first.
They were creepy, and we kind of played it off like it's a joke. Like, oh, they're weird, and they're notorious murderers. Watch out, Magnus. Don't worry, Walt. And it's like, hey, this is horrifying.
This is ridiculous.
This was horrifying.
And the mead makes you very poetic.
Yeah.
It gets you drunk.
Yeah.
It turns you into a bit of a happy drunk.
But it's magic, too.
Yeah.
So specifically, so they're like, well, what the fuck is the mead called?
I don't remember.
Oh, I didn't read the description like I read last time. Should I do that now, or is it too far? Okay.
Why not?
Because mostly I would like to read it now because of how hard we ripped into it last time. So I want to see if this one is like
fits better.
Mm-hmm. Magnus Chase, son of Frey, the god of summer and health, isn't naturally inclined towards being a brave warrior. Still, with the help of his motley group of friends, he has achieved deeds he never would have thought possible. Now he faces his most dangerous trial yet. Loki is free from his chains. He's readying Naglfar, the ship of the dead, complete with a host of giants and zombies, to sail against the Asgardian gods and begin the final battle of Ragnarok. It's up to Magnus and his friends to stop him, but to do so, they'll have to sail across the oceans of Midgard, Jotunheim, and Niflheim in a desperate race to reach Naglfar before it's ready to sail. Along the way, they'll face angry sea gods, hostile giants, and an evil, fire-breathing dragon. But Magnus's biggest challenge will be facing his own inner demons. Does he have what it takes to outwit the wily trickster god?
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry, I did the last sentence that I'm about to read to you is so fucking wild right. compared to everything I just said. Life preservers are mandatory for this wet, wild, and wondrous adventure, the third entry in Rick Riordan's number one best-selling Norse mythology
There's
series.
No ship shenanigans. There's one at the very start. And then we're like, all right, Granddad God is going to just give us smooth sailing. There's no ship shenanigans.
Life preservers are mandatory. What do you mean?
There's more Why ship did, shenanigans in the first
ship
book.
Ship of the Dead? What does that mean? That was wild. Well, I was hoping
Ship of the Dead is Naglfar.
Well, I know. Sorry. I know the Ship of the Dead is Naglfar. It's the life preservers thing. We were just like, they just really wanted to lean into
the ship.
The ship part. Of it. Oh, okay.
Is it Njord?
I'm looking for. Oh, I think so. I'm on. I was looking for the name of the mead. So we could specifically cite that.
I think we get that when talking to Njord.
Yeah. What are you doing in my cauldron?
Oh, that's not Njord. Njord is grandpa.
Yeah, Njord is grandpa. I just saw that. Aegir is that guy's name. He's the mead
Aegir's
giant.
Aegir's mead then.
Uh-huh.
Or no, Aegir is the giant making the mead.
Yeah, that one's funny. I love that scene where they're like, well, I guess we have to, because they have Blitz and Hearth captured and they're going to eat him for dinner. And Samir's like, well, you know, I'm actually observing Ramadan.
Know, dwarf and...
So like, I have to break my fast with a dwarf and an elf. So like, I can't
eat
They're
also halal, so I can't eat
yeah,
them.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think they're halal. No, they're not. They're definitely
right,
not.
That's what it is.
And Magnus is like, and I'm a vegetarian. And Alex is like, and I have green hair, so what are you going to do? Yeah. And that was so funny.
And the guy's just like, all right, fine, I guess.
I guess. Like, ugh, whatever.
Whip up something quick. I don't know, like a salad.
Mm-hmm. In the sequence, and I do have to shout out, we're not the first podcast to shout this out, but I would feel it's a disrespect not to shout out the transition from chapter 9 to chapter 10. And Aegir is hosting and giving
Kvasir's.
Him... Kvasir, thank Kvasir's you. Kvasir's mead. And he's hosting and he's giving him all the mead and he's like, I think you'll find this one has a fruity edge, Aegir said, with just a hint of Magnus Chase! Blood yelled, surging to her feet and pointing at me. This is Magnus Chase! Chapter 10. Typical. Somebody says fruity edge and immediately my name comes to mind. Damn, Rick! There's no way you wrote that sentence whole cloth. Who told you how to write that sentence? Who told you the joke?
I bet he did.
That's I'm not. who did you get advice from to pull off a fruity edge joke?
That's great. That's fun.
Rick!
I laughed at that too.
It's so good. Typical. So basically, what we get is to get out of the situation, they're like, hey, we're going to go get some of Kvasir's mead. Yeah. And we'll give you some. We'll give you some as a thank you for letting us go and not killing us, even though you promised your wife
no.
we would. And he's like, sure. Well, what's your plan? He's like, I'm going to use it to challenge Loki to a flighting. Because they brought up the flighting beforehand, the ancient one that happened in the hall, where Loki just wrecked.
Just their fucking.
Shot. Just absolutely read
just
them all.
Just flamed
the,
everybody.
Had the receipts
dude.
And just. Oof. It's what drag queens are trying to recreate every time they step
Woke
up.
Like chose murder, dude.
Yep, every single day. And that's not the reason that they all tied him up.
No.
But when he finally did a thing they could justify punishing him for, there was probably a lot of feelings about what happened at the flighting that contributed to their response. That's exactly what she's like. I'm the one.
I'm the one who did the venom shit.
They were fine just to tie him up with the intestines of his dead sons. No. I put the snake above his face because how fucking dare he? And I'm like, absolutely respect no notes. She has done nothing wrong. So grandpa's name. Because he finally asked. So Magnus asks, he's like, hey, dad, can I get some help? And Njord.
Yep.
You're right.
Compliment his feet.
Because he's got
very
great feet.
Fine feet.
Great feet.
The feet that won over Scotty, even to this day.
Yeah, even still, she's like, they were nice feet, though.
They were magnificent.
He is
feet.
A summer god who wants to be on the beach with the seagulls. I'm an ice giantess. I want to go skiing and stay in my
the
snow
seagulls
cabin.
Are too loud. Thunder booming
every
in the
time.
Background.
Yeah, totally. But it's not the right kind of loud, right? Like, listen, I go to sleep listening to like my podcast, and that's fine. But if somebody else has their thing going on while I'm trying to sleep, now that's too loud. But so that's what the note that Uncle Randolph had left was specifically about the whetstone,
yeah.
But also about something about Kvasir's mead. And Magnus is like, I don't know what the fuck that means. what does that mean? Yeah. But fortunately, he figures out the Kvasir's mead thing. And then Hearth and Blitz are like, okay.
Oh, I did leave out something when I was covering everything.
Oh, did you? Did you leave out something?
I left out the ring dragon.
Yeah, so we circled back to Mr. Alderman.
Yeah.
Who manages to continue to be the worst till the end of his days.
Yeah, he did suffer Fafnir's curse. Became a dragon.
Became a dragon?
Yeah.
A fucking greedy, gold-hoarding monster dragon with the cursed ring who's talking to himself like he's got someone else giving him advice. And again, I want to remind you all that Tolkien really loved Norse mythology.
Yeah, Fafnir is fun in Smite.
Really?
He's a fucking blast. Love playing him. I got a really sweet skin
where
it's called a Griffin Dwarf, and he turns into a big old griffin.
That's very good.
It's a lot of fun.
That's very good. So they have to go and get another whetstone. A second whetstone. Mr. Alderman just has all this shit.
Yeah.
So they need this specific whetstone and they don't even know why. But they gotta have it. And okay. But he's a dragon. Okay, well, we have to kill the dragon. And that's pretty brutal. Because to do so, Hearthstone uses magic to, like, summon the spirit of his dead brother?
It's a crazy thing to be able to do, I feel.
Crazy thing. I mean, not forever.
It's the runestones, but it's still, like, I don't know. It feels weird.
Well, I would, for book three and how hard Hearth has been, like, training and growing in the magic, I don't think it's something he could ever do again.
Yeah.
I think it's something he could do because he's powerful enough and it was the right. Like, I don't think he could just summon anyone. Like, I doubt he could summon, like, Blitz's dad or Magnus's mom, yeah. Right? Like, I think it, because it feels like magic is sometimes, like, the rune magic in these books, it's specifically the situation. Like, it's calling for a solution to this specific situation. And in this specific situation, it was Hearth. And the dragon was his father, and they're right at the place where his brother died. And well, I guess this is what I'm going to have to do. Use this runestone I had given up forever ago, and fuck, okay, let's go.
Yep.
Because later on, they use it to turn invisible.
It's the same runestone?
Yeah, he gives him the inheritance runestone.
Oh, interesting.
So I think the runestones don't just do one specific thing.
No, they're like the fabric of the universe.
Or whatever, so they do what they need to do, so... Hearth is able to summon his brother's spirit to try to help him get his brother to literally not even just trick the dad or distract him long enough for Magnus to kill him, like try to convince him to give up the ring.
Dad doesn't believe that it's real.
Mm-hmm. And then when he does and realizes that Hearth is a part of it, he does just go into rage mode. He's because he's a bad dude. And then Blitz rolls up and just drives back a dragon.
Very good scene. Very strong scene.
Mm-hmm. And then Magnus stabs the shit out of him. And then dragon's blood is acid. Run away.
Yep.
I'm never mad when we slay an evil beast. And this was a very evil beast.
Yep.
And it was complicated and it was hard, but... And even his last words were to tell Hearth to use your board.
Yeah.
Like when Hearth was trying to like speak to him and
it was rough.
Hey man, I'm not sad. Hearth comes out of that with a lot of conflicting emotions.
Yeah.
And his little brother's like, don't be sad. It happens. Whatever. When I was playing it that well? I wish to be just like you. What the fuck?
I wish to be as kind as you.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't believe that, actually. I don't think he's lying. I think he's telling Hearth a thing he wants to tell his brother to try to make him feel better.
No, I think it was possible because he was like 5, Hearth was 8.
They were 9 and 8, 7 and 8. Yeah, they were only 1 year apart.
Probably saw all the abuse that Hearth went, but was still super kind.
I guess I wonder, yeah, I mean, I bet his parents were so great to him, but I would imagine it got worse.
It definitely got worse, but they're still like forcing him to use the board, right?
Yeah,
I'm certain
probably.
That was still going on. I'm certain... Yeah. That they're either.
It just seems like a very advanced thing for a kid to be like, I wanted to be as kind as my brother.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. I don't know. I'd still be like, listen, I.
Probably didn't say it, like phrase it like that, yeah. But something like
something
that. You
like
know?
That. I want to be just like my big brother.
Yeah, some shit like that.
Something like that. So, now, can you explain this to me? Because I don't understand. Why the fuck does Hearth need to heat the heart?
Because Hearth wants the memories and wisdom of his mom.
No, I don't think that's it.
That's what he said.
Well, he says there might be other memories of his family.
Still like things.
But I don't think. Yeah, that is it.
That's what he's.
But he doesn't. But he doesn't want to. It's like has to.
Well, it's he does. He can either destroy it or get the memories and wisdom of his father.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to. He would rather have the memories and wisdom of his father rather than just letting that go into the ether.
I don't know. I feel like.
I think that's what it is.
I think he's saying he's like. It doesn't. I don't know if he would rather do that. It read it to me as if it felt like he feels like he must do that. Mm-hmm. And also, like, Magnus is like, well, maybe he's hoping if he sees the memories, he'll see a memory of, like, a version of his dad that did think kindly of him in maybe. Some way, shape, or form. And Magnus is like, that's just not going to be there. And doing this and trying to give him grace or understand why he was the way he was is not going to help my friend. And that sucks. And I'm upset. And oh, shit, I just burnt myself by accident. Oh, fuck, the thing's in the fire. Oh, I tried to grab it. Ah, I burned my hand. Now it's in my mouth. Now I ate it. And he's like, oh, no, I fucked up so bad. Oh, no. And Earth is just like, it's actually totally fine. And
it's a weight off my shoulder. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, because they're also talking about, the weir of, like, killing an ancestor and eating it or whatever. Like, it's like a lot of fate and magic stuff all intertwined into it. But then Magnus can hear birds.
It amplifies his ancestral blood to where now he can understand animals. Because I think later he also talks to like a squirrel. It's not just birds.
It's mostly birds.
It's mostly birds.
I think there's a goat. There's a mountain goat later?
There's a goat, yeah. He can talk to animals now because his dad is the sun, or is the god of summer
and
nature.
And I think that's why this is happening. But it does feel like no one's really clear on like why. It's like, could Mr. Alderman do this? I don't think so.
Yeah, he's like, no, it wasn't possible.
Yeah, he sucked too much to care about that. Yeah. It's very like, why did that happen?
He's setting up for his grand major book that's going to entail all three of the pantheons.
Is that what it's for? Because it does feel like it didn't need to happen here. Because it felt like Magnus could have, because he's cranking the thing. And then he does it too fast and it falls. And so he reaches to try to grab the heart from the fire and he gets the stuff on his hand. And that burns the fire and then he ate it. It was a total accident. And I feel like it could have still been he tried to grab it, burnt his hands and couldn't and didn't eat the heart at all.
I mean, he gets to talk to the crows, which helps him with his plan.
Right. I feel like that the thing with the crows is like so minor a thing that the solution could have been solved without the crows.
The problem is he is working on something. We know he
is. There's a
greater arc that we've heard that he's planning something huge.
Yeah. And he needs Magnus.
I mean Rick Riordan.
Yeah, Rick Riordan. And so he needs Magnus to be able to talk to animals.
I guess.
I would actually, if that's why this happened, that would make me feel so much better about it. Because it is like the thing that just like, okay, we were just hyped up and told that if you eat the heart, you will gain like the memories or powers of the person.
Memories and wisdom, not specifically powers.
Thank you. Memories or wisdom. Magnus gets neither.
He gets a memory.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't get a memory.
Weird. I thought I got.
What memory do you think it was?
Fuck, I don't remember.
Okay, well, let me flip through it then.
I remember him getting something that wasn't just talking to animals. It was a very brief flash of something.
The ring is. Oh yeah, they gave the treasure back to the one guy who was a fish.
Yep.
Maybe he's there. Maybe he's not. Whatever. They gave it back.
They put it back in the spot they found it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hold on. Humans have DNA, don't they?
Super good.
That was funny. I do. Yeah, I love this thing. That's when I messed up. I got too excited. I was focused on Hearth and not paying attention to my job as chef. I turned the spit a little too forcefully. The heart wobbled. The braces collapsed inward and the whole thing toppled into the fire. Oh, but wait, it gets worse. With my lightning fast and incredibly stupid in-house reflexes, I grabbed for the heart. I almost caught it in one hand, but it rolled off my fingertips and crashed into flames, combusting like its ventricles were filled with gasoline. In a red flash, the heart was gone. Oh, but wait, it gets worse still. The sizzling heart left boiling grease on my fingers. And dumb Magnus, incredibly gross Magnus, I did what most people do when they touch something hot. I instinctively put my fingers in my mouth. Tastes like ghost chili mixed with a concentrated Hawaiian punch soup. And I he's no, spit, no, 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 no. Oh, they can do weird things to DNA. I don't want to turn into a dragon or worth an evil elf father. And he's apologizing to Hearth. And then Hearth tells him, it was weird. You killed the dragon. Fate decided that you should taste his blood. You put my father's soul to rest. You saved me from that deed. It may cost you, though, and it is I who am sorry. And then we hear, then somewhere above, a chirping voice said, okay. What a knucklehead. Yeah, so no memories, just now okay. He can talk to the birds.
It fucked with his weird, I guess.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, later on, smash cut to when we've got the quest of actually getting the mead from the cave, because there are crows, and they're like, hey, yeah, we'll totally help you if you give us something shiny.
They don't have a plan.
They don't have a plan. All he does is, the crows distract the giant.
Get all in the giant's face.
So Jack can take care of him.
Yeah.
That's just not enough, right? Like, it's not like it. Magnus could have, he could have done something clever to get the crows to fly at the giant, like had something else to do.
This is me again huffing copium. I'm sure he's got something planned for it.
No, and again, for real, if it turns out that Magnus being able to talk to animals is like the big game changer, I'm fine with that. Because otherwise, this was just a really weird thing. Like, he could have just...
Him and Percy could have a good conversation with a horse.
Blackjack!
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I had not considered that it may be a thing that he wants for... Because it does not do much in the rest of this book, except for the crows, which I feel like isn't enough. It's,
yeah.
But I liked Mallory's stuff was really cool. Like how she solves when they get she sharpens her sword and the whetstone is incredible. And so they get to the giant who has the remains of Kvasir's mead. And he's got these 12 thanes?
Not thanes.
Thralls.
And they're slaves.
They're slaves.
They're Norse slaves. So it's a little different.
But yeah,
not really, but a little. I don't know.
It is in a sense that if you want to talk about the impact of like the chattel slavery that destroyed.
American slavery was unique in a lot of ways.
It was no, you cannot. Yeah, the justification like, oh, all ancient worlds did that. It's like, one, that doesn't ever make it moral. Two, it also was not the same practice. So yeah, like, we are not the podcast to get into that right now, no. But just really much, anyone's like, well, the Norse did it too. It's like, yeah, that didn't make it okay then, and it wasn't the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, and what's wild about this is that in this sequence, twice in this sequence, so first they're like, okay, we've got the thralls, and they feel like, we don't want to just kill these guys, they're slaves, like, can't we just free them? Like, let's do that.
Problem is, they also didn't seem to have an issue with their situation.
Let's not house elves this. They weren't jazzed about where they were at, like, well, we have to do this. We wouldn't want to do this, but we have to do this, and we think the master might be, we'd love to take a break, but we can't until we finish this, and we think he might give us bad equipment to keep us from ever taking a break. Like, they're not happy. Yeah, they would prefer this not be their situation.
But they're also going to kill
them. That's the problem. It's like, what if we freed you? When would you, what would you do? And like, oh, we would definitely just go, we would leave. Awesome, without killing us? Oh no, we would still kill you because we like killing humans.
And killing humans is fun for us. That's a pastime that we enjoy, much like you enjoy soccer or... very similarly.
Like fishing?
Matador.
What?
The Matador.
What a weirdly specific reference! I would have given you fishing! I would have given you bow hunting! I would have given you...
Yeah, well, those entail different things, not just hunting for sport.
So Rick makes sure to take the option of just freeing them off the table.
Yeah.
Because Mallory is able to do the clever thing where she's like, look, here's the whetstone. And if I sharpen your scythe with it, look how much quicker you can get your work done. And you'll actually be able to finally rest.
Yeah.
But only one person can have it and you can't share it. So you have to fight over it. And she throws it in the air and they all fight over it and they kill each other. Because
that's the only way that they can die. Yes,
because they're magic. It's nothing else. Because, yeah, the giant who has them in the thrall, he...
They'll also be reborn in Giningagap or whatever.
That was well said, DJ.
Yeah, they'll be reborn in the primordial cesspool that is that.
Owen would call it the primordial soup.
Yep.
They can only be killed by one another. And we would never do that. We love each other. So Mallory tricks them into accidentally killing one another. Yeah. And she feels so fucking bad about that. Like, she is not okay. She's like, but again, it had to be done. And she was the only one who was going to make that call.
And TJ obviously also isn't okay with it because they're slaves. But it's also like, again, they were going to kill them regardless.
Yeah, but that's a weird thing that they don't mention. When they're arguing with TJ, it's just like, oh, it had to be done. that's again, like, don't argue with TJ about whether or not he's allowed to have feelings about this. Yeah. I think what Mallory does, she's like, I'm sorry it happened. Like, I think that was the right way for her to deal with it. She's like, yeah, you're going to be upset. Like, of course. Like, of course. That sucked. They did try. They don't mention that we tried and they were going to kill us anyway.
Regardless of what we did, they were just
Would it have been better if we freed them and then killed them? Except no, because if they freed them, they wouldn't have had to cut the Groot anymore. So then they would just kill them and left.
Yeah.
It was a really weird...
And it was nine giants.
Yeah, nine giants. It was a really weird way to bring this in. And then Rick does it, Ryan does it again when they get to the door and there's the giantess who's imprisoned in there and she's the daughter of the giant who has Cavassier's mead. And she's...
Odin was a charmer.
Yeah, because Odin stole it because he charmed her and she let him in. And then later she had a son who is Bragi.
Bragi, yeah.
Who is the who's the god of poetry. That like, mead.
I, 9 months later, I might have mentioned that Odin was a charmer.
And that the fact that the mead is the thing that's going to make you good at flighting in words and her son after hooking up with Odin was the god of... You got a real wicked, oh, have another sip of the elixir, have another little swallow, little lady, and follow me down. Shout out to Erica Ito, who a good friend from Seaweed Brain Podcast, who was recently cast to be Nessa Rose on the North American tour of Wicked.
Nice. That's awesome.
Go see, if it's in your area, you should go see that. I'm going to go see it. It's coming to town next year.
Wonderful.
It's going to be one of the last shows Erica is in, actually.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I'm going to buy up like a whole row at the mall. I'm splurging. I'm getting floor seats. No upper mezzanine for us on this one.
No upper mezzanine to the right to where the stage is a little blocked off.
But definitely they were partaking in some of that mead that night.
Yeah, 100%. That's why there's so little left.
Yeah. So Magnus's instinct and Sam and Mallory are like, oh, well, hey, if we free you, will you give us the mead? And the giantess is like, oh, like, yeah, for sure. Except you can't do that. You actually can't.
It's
free
just
me.
Actually impossible.
I am basically, my father bound my life force to the cave. I can't leave. What the fuck do you mean your dad bound your life force to this cave? You can't leave? And our heroes are on a time limit.
I don't know. He took her runes and just tied it to the cave, I guess.
I believe it. But what it means is that we can't do anything to free her. And so, but she's like, well, if you open the door, like DJ said earlier, if you open the door enough for me to see, have fresh air and see the sky, I've got a hose in here and we can like get it. What is it called when you do that?
Siphon
it out. And that's what they do. And I'm just like, why did we have two back-to-back things where we make it so the heroes are not able to do the right thing? Back-to-back, Rick. Why couldn't we just let her out?
Because giants suck.
Can someone come back to help her? Can we send Hearth back to see if he can do some rune shit to help this lady?
No,
like,
idea.
Damn. Is this a myth? Is this another thing where Rick is not willing to, like, adjust the pre-established myth? I'll give you the thralls thing. That was a bummer that they were slaves, but that was a really cool, clever solution. Like, I'll give you that. This one just made me sad. Damn. Okay. Yeah, everyone's getting their big damn hero moments. It's good. We haven't talked about Alex. I love Alex so much more in this book. Like, this
Alex
is the book
is
where I'm like, all right, Alex is in fact one of my, like, my second favorite character in the books. Like, I think Alex is great. I think
Alex
she's super
awesome.
Fun and she's, like, very sharp and very funny. I like her humor. And I think it very much was what we were talking about in the last book where it's like, because she is uncomfortable in her situation, she is extremely, extremely defensive.
It felt more readable that way in this book than it did in the last one.
Well, I think because she's not uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
She's not feeling defensive. And so because she is comfortable with Magnus, because she's comfortable with these other characters in this environment, she isn't putting up those like barriers of thorns.
Yeah.
And thus is like, you're like, oh, you are like a nice person and you're not going to just make fun of us for no reason. That said, I still have some feelings about her and Magnus's relationship.
It feels a touch forced personally.
Perhaps again, speaking from past experience of being the one trying and never knowing where you stand with the other person because they're just going to decide, I want this one day, but not this the next day, but I'm never going to tell you what it is I want. I want to leave you on the hook until I decide I want something.
Yeah.
And it kind of reads that way And I don't think it's supposed to read that way.
I think it's supposed to read that way in a joking manner.
Yeah.
But it's just falling flat.
Yeah, where it's supposed to read is like, Alex is fiercely independent and not someone who ever wants to be tied down. It's like,
fine.
But simultaneously, they do like Magnus. Like, she is the one that kisses Magnus first. She clearly does have a crush on Magnus because when he heals Alex at one time and sees a flash of Alex's memory, it's just of him. It's a memory that Alex has of Magnus saying something, looking kind of silly, getting embarrassed and flustered about it.
Yeah.
And that is, and listen, you're going to write me like a cute romance. Yes. The fact that one of their most precious memories is a nothing moment that they cherish about the other person.
It's great. Course. It's cute. It's very
and
awesome.
And they think they're going to die. And the last thing she wants to do is kiss Magnus. And is like, I wasn't going to die without doing that as we're freezing to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And then when they're in Scotty's hall and he looks around like, maybe I want to sit next to Alex. And Alex is already sitting next to someone else, which is fine. But she like makes fun of him for like looking at her like that. And I'm like, okay, that kind of sucks.
I don't appreciate going back to the status quo.
Yeah, we're not going to
as
like,
if nothing happened.
But I also that like, kind of sucks. But again, they're also like 15, 16 years old.
I don't fucking care. If I kiss somebody, it changes. Even when I was 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
Like that.
I'll take you where you can. But it's like, oh, I'm not ready. It's like Alex doesn't want anyone else. Like, this is just a thing that she has with, I don't know. Because later on, everyone gives Magnus a hard time during the flighting where he talks about how Alex kissed him and it was like the best thing that ever happened to him in his entire life. And later on, Samira is like, you know, that was kind of a big bombshell. You like dropped on her.
She kissed him out of nowhere.
What is a bombshell? And then when he goes tries to talk to Alex, like, you should really talk to her about that. He's like, oh, I guess, well, she hasn't wanted to talk to me about that since. So okay, I'll do that. And then Alex's thing is like, whoa,
Alex
yeah,
also you think kind I'm of just like, shuts him down about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, wow, like, you think I'm amazing? I'm like, yeah, that's nice. And I guess you're kind of cute. But, you know, I'm not going to just date anybody that, like, I happen to kiss. So, you know, like, I need some. And it's like, are you a 16-year-old who was a little freaked out about the fact that your crush actually does like you back, and then everyone just found out about it, and you're like, okay, hold, I'm just gonna play it cool. I'm gonna be too aloof. I just can't deal with this right now. Because that's
even
yeah.
when I was 15, I hated games like that. If somebody ever played it with me, I would fucking. That's like, all right. That's the end of that relationship. I'm done with that.
Is it a game or is it a panic response of being like, oh, I don't know how to deal with this.
It doesn't matter. I genuinely had somebody like that.
That sucks.
I approach them and shit, I'm like, but then they continue to do this regardless if it's a panic response. You're now fucking with my shit.
Yeah, that's what
I didn't like that. So I'm like, I'm cutting that off and I'm done.
Yeah,
I was at the end of that. I stopped hanging out with that person.
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's the thing where it's like, they think
like, I get it. They also have all eternity, so maybe shit's different. But it's also like, you have all eternity. Why even fucking bother with this bullshit?
Yeah, it was weird. I didn't super love that. And then later on, Alex comes to talk to Magnus again, like towards the end, and he kisses Magnus again, and it's great. And I especially love the point of it being the first time Alex kissed Magnus. We were have she, her, and then later on, Alex was he, him.
Yeah.
And we do have Magnus thinking like, oh, Alex is a dude right now. How do I feel about that? And
well, then who cares? Like, it's Alex.
Alex Fierro is kissing me. I feel great about that. And I love that Rick made a point to like specifically be like, no, we're not going to have this. They only kiss when it's potentially a straight. We're like, no, that's not what's happening here. Like, Magnus likes Alex. Damn it, Rick, you did this on purpose. I know you did.
What?
Having their names be Magnus and Alex. Oh, I talked about this last book. He's got two other Cassandra Clare names in Daughter of the Deep.
That's funny.
And I'm over here like, I see you, Rick.
That's funny.
You're ruining my life, Rick. And so I like, and Magnus likes Alex all the time. And so I love that.
Yeah.
But then even after that, they kiss and Alex is like, I don't know, I still need to think about it a little bit. And like, he bounces, but he's whistling like a Fly Me to the Moon, the fucking elevator music.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you get the gist of like, no, Alex does like Magnus also.
It's still dumb.
And then in the end, they're talking about like they're holding hands and Magnus hasn't tried to hold Alex's hand at all. And I get the respect of like not pushing it, but it's like, I, I, I don't, I think
there's a point.
It does feel like Alex, I don't think Rick meant to write it like Alex is playing games with Magnus, but it super comes off like Alex is playing games with Magnus. Yeah. And like, we're only going to have Magnus be there when Alex wants him there.
Yeah.
And that kind of creates a situation where what Alex wants is always going to be more important than whatever Magnus wants. Like, yeah. Magnus wanting to have a relationship on certain terms and have that connection, that doesn't matter. It's always going to be what Alex wants, and the relationship will be defined by Alex solely.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's you and I both coming from our own personal experiences and ending up in situations like that, where I don't think that's what Rick intended.
But it's how it's coming.
That's how it's coming, especially at the end where it's like, well, Alex is very fluid in both their shape-shifting and who they are, what they want, and you can't pin that down. You just have to be along for the ride. Hey, Magnus, is that what you want in your relationship? You've never
really
thought about that.
Do you really want to be along with the ride?
Like, if that's good for you, that's great. But it feels like maybe... Like, have you thought about that? Like, is that really what's... Because that's the thing. 9 from the 9, Alex's story makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
Now, Magnus isn't in 9 from the 9, but Alex has a thought where she wishes that Magnus was there after seeing Halfborn and Mallory being all romantic. She's like, she has a thought, she's like, oh, I kind of wish Magnus was here, but he's visiting his cousin in Annabeth. So that makes me feel a little bit better about the... Just getting confirmation that, like, no, Alex genuinely does like Magnus too. And there may be the playing games is more just like teasing because he teases Magnus all the time.
The problem is there's got to be a shutoff at some point.
Yeah.
And it can't be only when you're about to die.
Right. It can't be only when you're about to die.
It cannot be only when you're about to die. You have to turn it off at some point, or else it's just going to come off as mean, mean, mean all the time.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't get to see any more of their relationship
because
it's less book. So that's like 9 from the 9 made me feel a little better because it takes place an indeterminate amount after the end of the book. So having... Interesting. It takes place after an indeterminate time after the book, and then Magnus is visiting Annabeth.
Yeah.
But Annabeth is in California.
Yeah.
What's Magnus doing visiting Annabeth?
Found out that Annabeth just lost a friend and needed to go fucking visit her goddamn, or his goddamn cousin.
maybe, but he didn't find that out. We don't know when it took place, because this takes place after the end of Trials of Apollo.
Yes.
Or...
After the end of Trials
yeah,
of
yeah,
Apollo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they find out after their road trip.
And the road trip
happens during Tower.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Does Apollo visit them? Does he visit Magnus? Not Magnus. Percy and Annabeth? No.
No, I don't think so.
Which is smart.
He visited all the people who helped him.
Yes. They don't like him.
Yeah.
They wouldn't want to see him. I think that shows growth. Apollo not going to visit Percy at the end, acting like, Percy will of course want to see me. Like,
no, yeah.
He wouldn't. Apollo, you're such a good character.
Apollo's great.
So
best MC.
Best MC. So maybe, but it also, it's like, again, it's not easy to go visit Annabeth anymore. She's in California. And yeah, you have the World Tree,
it
but the World
be easy.
No, the World Tree always drops him off in Boston. That's what they say. It's connected to Boston. So yes. He'd have to get across the country somewhere else.
Room
and it's
magic.
Like,
I don't know. There's got to be some sort of teleportation.
I'm not
magic,
saying
right?
It's impossible. I'm saying it would take more of an effort. And that ties into us talking about how obviously Rick Riordan has some other stuff he's planning to be more connected in these worlds with these like dangling pieces. And is this throwaway line of like, well, why isn't Magnus in this anthology story? Well, because he's visiting Annabeth. Like, was it just a throwaway excuse or was it a quiet, but she's in California or is she back home?
It's a quiet, I'm assembling a team.
I'm assembling that. Watch this never happen.
No, it's never going to happen. It's actually, he's going to do this anthology series that he's doing with Son and the Star and then the two other ones that he's planning on doing.
Which makes me very happy.
Do the new Percy Jackson trilogy that he's doing.
Right. Is it a trilogy?
I assume. He's got to get 3.
He's got a 3, right? My brain thought it was 5.
No.
I am excited for...
it's probably going to be fun.
Triple Goddess.
I'm honestly sitting here at the same level as, maybe a little more as Chalice.
Because
I did like Chalice a lot.
I like Chalice a lot.
But, dude, I just don't care.
No, it's weird. But I like that. It's like we're getting a mandatory beach episode.
Fair enough.
Right? We know whatever challenge they're going to face is going to be fine in the end. This isn't going to have huge lasting impacts to the
characters. No, we actually know how it resolves. It resolves fine. He gets to Camp Jupiter.
Yeah. So what we actually get is to really just spend time with the characters and let them interact with it. Like, we got so much time with Annabeth and Grover. Oh, yeah. The pacing was wild. Have we talked about...
No, we haven't talked about
Chalice. No, we haven't talked about Chalice at all. Not even on, like, a bonus episode. We should probably talk about Chalice.
Yeah.
But for now, I want to ask you a question, DJ. So we get through everything. We have the Pottery Barn battle. We have Halfborn Gunderson saving the day. We have the fight with Loki and Magnus winning at the end. We meet the gods. We're all reunited at the end. And
I challenge you to shake my hand.
Oh.
So stupid. It's so sweet, but just so dumb.
TJ talks the talk about how, like, when you're a son of Tyr, if someone challenges you, you have to do
it. You have to answer the call, but it's still
but he also talks about how his dad seemed, like, a little, like, nervous about, because he never met, so he just, like, I challenge you to shake my hand. I challenge accepted. And so it's just, like, it's the true bond of, like, I know you're my son, and this is me acknowledging you as my son. I will make a challenge to you.
It's just dumb. It's a little dumb.
Yeah, but it's sweet. TJ got to meet his dad.
Oh, I know. Like, again, super sweet. A very touching moment.
It's so stupid. No, you're right. And at the end, unfortunately, there was only enough mead for Magnus to do, like, one sip.
Yeah.
Right? So they don't have any, like, they promised Aegir. And so he tells Odin, he's like, hey, so I promised Aegir some of this, and, like, I don't know what to do about that. Oh, don't worry. We'll give him some for my special reserve.
Of course Odin's got a special reserve. It's Odin.
So the gods have had, on Valhalla, or on Asgard, where Valhalla is located, they've had the mead the whole time. So I ask you, DJ, why did we bother going on the quest at all? Did the quest even matter if we could have just gotten the mead?
I mean, I doubt if he approached Odin's like, hey, I need this mead, I don't think Odin would be like, yeah, okay.
Why not? If it's to beat Loki.
Because it's fucking gods, dude. I don't know. The gods. They're the gods, Darren. What more do you want from me? These people are fickle in every single mythology.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. They do show up. Like, in this one, they show the fuck up, like, way more than the other gods.
Because they're also the Norse gods. They're a little more active wanting to do stuff.
Thor being like, okay, we're all going to go in and get my hammer, or Magnus praying, and
Odin's not like, saying, don't meddle in other, like, the mortal affairs, but that's also because there are 9 worlds for these gods to interact
with. You're right. They can meddle whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a question that... I set you up. I know the answer. This is a question that when I was on Seaweed Brain last year, 2 years ago, I don't even know. Carter asked the Coast of Seaweed Brain. They said, like, why did we even go on this at all? Like, did it even matter? And when they asked that, it hit me. Yes, it does. Because this story is very much about the journey. And I don't mean that in the, oh, it was about the journey, not the, no.
Well, the journey helped him with the flighting.
That's exactly it. Magnus would have lost if they had not gone on the journey. And if the gods had just given him the mead and then dropped him on that boat, he would have lost.
Oh, yeah.
Because the flight, this is what we haven't talked about yet. And I set it up so we can talk about it. Because this is my favorite book for this reason. It's my favorite book because of the flighting.
Yeah.
Because of how the journey is really the point of everything. How the journey wasn't just getting our hero from point A to point B where they would have won regardless. It is because of the journey, because of their friends, because of everyone with them that Magnus wins. Because... I'm sure, dear listeners, you probably know, but if you don't know, a flighting isn't a combat. It's a battle of words. We said at the top, it's a reading. It's you have the receipts. It's just you're going to shit talk your opponent until they feel so small.
You're going to go back and forth. What are those kind of shit?
What are those? There was one time where we in the sibling chat were like bickering about something nonsensical. And I said, fight me. And you said, no, because I'm tiny. And I said, no, flight me. And then he's like, well, now you're in a different weight class. Stop punching down. It was very good. It was years ago, and I remember it to this day. But, and Loki's just tearing Magnus apart. Like, you're nothing. Yeah. You couldn't even got here on your own. Like, and Loki's, and Magnus is like, you're evil, you're terrible. He's like, I know that. Yeah, I know that. Like,
of course.
Oh, what am I, a god or a giant? Shit. Like, the gods are all giants too. Like, there's, and he's, Magnus is physically getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm going to read the whole goddamn thing. I'm going to fucking.
No, I won't let you do that because that's a lot.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
It's like seven characters he talks
it's
about.
So it's so good.
It's like six or seven paragraphs.
Yes. It's fine. I'll do it quick. Okay. No, it's fine. Because it's a lot of his internal dialogue, thinking about what he's saying. Mm-hmm. I love... Okay, you're right. It is multiple pages. But the first...
Like, this was a 30-minute segment when I was going through double speed. It wasn't, but...
No. I love... all of it, and how it's just, it's tied on Signin, Loki's wife, who we talked about, like, we think she probably distracted him the last
and
book.
It's like, you've always been alone, Loki.
Yeah, and
like,
she's
I'm not sick.
Yeah, and she's... Huh?
I want to see it.
Oh, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Well, I just want to see the word.
Oh, her name?
Yeah, her name. Where is it at? I think it's like Signin.
Signin. That makes more sense. Thank you. I'm adding an N where there isn't one. I throw consonants where there aren't one. And he's thinking
it's
about
Norse,
how, like...
It's kind of how, it, like, you're playing it safe, but it's also...
Yeah. And it's him realizing, like, she's been there the whole time, but Loki can't even trust her. Like, she's not actually loyal to him. Like, all these people, like, hold on. Like, he's realizing, like, oh, shit, wait, hold on. Like, I did get here because of my friends. Like, it's what Percy taught me. My team is my biggest strength. The flighting was supposed to cut people down to size, to insult them into nothingness. But I was a healer. I didn't cut people. I put them back together. I couldn't play by Loki's rules and hope to win. I had to play by my rules. Let me tell you about Mallory Keane.
Very strong. And then he goes on to just
okay, well,
talk
I won't
about...
read it, but he does Mallory and all the things she did and specifically and then and the deeds of and Halfborn Gunderson and the deeds of Thomas Jefferson Jr. and Blitzen, son of Freya. Yeah. And Hearthstone, and Samira al-Abbas, daughter of Loki, but better than Loki. And then, oh, we didn't talk about Samira's being fasting for Ramadan this whole time?
Yeah, the whole time.
The
fasting
whole
for
time. Really cool. I'd never read a book where a character was, you know, observing Ramadan. And I thought that was really cool. Slight thing, Rick talks about how, like, oh, they don't even shower because they can't drink the water. That's actually not a part of Ramadan. That's a very, very small, like...
Sect.
It's like, that's not common. And that's what happens if you research your, do your research on the internet and don't, like, talk to a person. Because that's a really, Rick would say, he's like, yeah, I looked it up and I found this and I didn't realize it was so, so niche and so, so uncommon. Yeah. So it's definitely, definitely good when you're writing experiences that you don't have personal experience with.
Well, hey, Samira's just part of that
niche sect. But she's been fasting the whole time. And Alex was worried at the top of that being, like, a struggle. And it's not. It's just the reason she is able to stand up to Loki.
Yeah.
Like, real quick, stepping back. And, like, Alex has... Loki has no control over Alex because Alex completely, like, her abilities are her own. Yeah. Like, this is a thing she embraces so completely. She thinks that if Sam also does that, she'll have the same thing. But that's not it.
Sam's a bit more of a control freak.
Yes, yes. But for Sam, it is... embracing her identity as her own. And for her, that is her faith. That is being a hijabi. That is being a Muslim woman, like observing Ramadan. When she doesn't, even with the rules of Ramadan, she for real doesn't have to. She's traveling. You don't have to fast when you travel.
Life or death situation.
She's in battle. Like, these are things that she could very much, like, all the rules of her religion, be like, oh no, you don't have to fast. Like, no. But she's like, I'm going to because it is important to me. And that is why she is able to stand. Loki doesn't have a control over her because she is in control of herself. And that was really fucking cool to see that in just, yeah, I won't get into that. But it was cool. But yeah, and all that while she's fasting for Ramadan. And then let me tell you all about Alex Fierro. And that's when Magnus describes all the cool things Alex did on their journey. And then when she kissed me under the blanket, well, that was just about the best thing that ever happened to me.
And very sweet.
He's citing everyone. This is my Othala. I know they will always support me, which is why I'm standing here triumphant on your ship, surrounded by my family and you. Even in the midst of thousands, you are still alone. And Loki is shrinking and he looks back for his wife and she's gone.
She's not there.
Also left. And TJ, the way I cried when I was listening to this on the audiobook, like,
it's very strong.
I'm walking into work in tears. Are you okay? Yes, fine. I just read a thing about family being your strength. Whatever.
That's fine. No worries.
Is this the Adventure Zone? Oh, man, I have a type. But just the way Magnus celebrates everyone around him, and in doing so builds himself back up, and then just utterly tears Loki down, like...
Yeah.
I talked last episode about Magnus subverting the tropes of our typical hero, being a healer and stuff. But this is where Riordan stuck the fucking landing. This is where I think he was going for from the jump, where he's like, this is Loki's big, the flighting was huge, because he tore everyone down. I want to write a character who's going to win because he builds people up, because he puts them back together. And I'm just like, that's why this is my favorite. Like, because it's not the ending you, but they still win. Like, still beat Loki, put him in the walnut shell. But it's, they don't get it the way you thought, and I love all, and it's these, the rest of Floor 19 has been around, but we, like, even the first and second book, we don't really know them. But by the end, I feel like I know them just as well as I know Blurth, as well as I know Blitzen and Hearthstone. Mm. Like, that's how well I think Rick wrote this one, that it feels so real to me, and I love the ending so very, very much. Like, it is, yes, Percy is great, and yes, I love the themes of Trials of Apollo, but I feel like for me, I think endings are really important to me, mm-hmm. and this one sticks the landing in a way where I have no notes.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's my big take. I think
for me, specifically regarding Riordan's books, I've never viewed an ending as an actual ending.
No, for real. They all bleed into the next one.
Yeah, they're all like... open ends mm-hmm. that are just going to eventually turn into, because like after Sun and Star will crazy, or after Charles of Apollo will crazy Sun and Star, because mm-hmm. he hinted at what's happening in Sun and Star.
Wild. And this one also like leaves open, because, and especially for the, like we talked about the top, like how the Norse stories with Ragnarok is a permanent inevitability, like I misremembered. I thought Magnus tries to convince them to do something else with Loki.
They did, yeah. But, she's like, yeah, why, like, just keep him, like, in a high security on Asgard? It's like, we can't actually change anything too crazy because Ragnarok's supposed to happen a certain way.
Totally. Right. But that's also the wild thing. Well, we got to talk about Ragnarok soon.
Oh, we want to delay it as long as possible. For most of us do.
Yeah, because we like, it is.
Because we like the creature comforts that we have. Yeah, but it's like, also like, we're excited for it.
We
also
know what's going to happen, and one day you will all die on this battlefield.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. Like, we're that excited. Is.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, that is wild.
It's
going to
be glorious combat, but, you know, I don't want to do it right now.
I don't want to do it yet. You remember how in the first book, Gunilla shows him Asgard and it's totally empty and she's real freaked out? We just didn't really ever
talk about that. No, I'm sure after this, it probably filled back up because everyone's like, oh, well, Loki's tied down and like stronger now and we don't got to worry about it for next couple while.
Yeah, it felt like that was just trying to make Gunilla not just so aggressively like villainous. Like she had a reason and that reason is fear because she doesn't think they can win because we are all the gods. They've been gone for 2 years since your mom died. Weird. And we're like, where were all the gods? We just never really followed up with that. We can just assume
because
it's like they were.
There's not enough gods to actually fill out a city that we know of.
Ooh, yeah. Maybe. So, yeah. And at the end, I do like how Rick Riordan balances the talking about the fact that because this book is Norse, because we know the ending, right? Ragnarok. We know all these characters who you just made me love so much will all die horribly someday. And after that, we don't know for sure what afterlife they're going to get, what reincarnate, because that's the end of all the things. That is the heat death of the universe kind of ending. And that's kind of scary. But at the end of the book, Magnus is sitting on top of the chase space, this like resource shelter, open invitation space for like homeless kids in Boston that he created mm-hmm. with Alex, holding Alex's hand and thinking about, you know, someday he would seek out the frozen land of the dead and see it for myself. But for now, we had fireworks. We had our friends, new and old. I had Alex Fierro next to me holding my hand. It might all stop at any moment. We and Harry know we are destined to die. The world will end. The big picture cannot be changed. But in the meantime, as Loki once said, we can choose to alter the details. That's how we take control of our destiny. Sometimes even Loki can be right. I liked that idea of like the details matter. Mm-hmm. Maybe the end game is always going to be this, but the details matter.
Yeah.
Maybe Magnus was always going to beat Loki on that ship, but the details of how he got there, being a healer and raising up his friends instead of cutting Loki down, those are the details that matter. Mm-hmm. It's good. I like it. Rick Riordan is a good writer. Ship,
he fucking flames the shit out of Loki. Easy, dude.
What?
Put Percy on that ship. Easy, dude. Easy flight. Any of the seven, except for maybe Frank.
I don't think Frank could do it.
No, Frank can't do it.
I don't think Hazel could do it.
Maybe not Hazel. Yeah, no. Frank and Hazel, they're a little too sweet.
Yeah.
Everybody else could probably flame the shit out of Loki.
I don't know. Okay, Hazel uses the mist to create a version of Loki that hasn't been scarred by all the things that happened.
Look at,
like,
look at what you could have done, dude.
I can see that in like, reality. Shit. Look at a better version of you.
This is you if you weren't a cock, dude.
If you didn't make your bad choices. Like, I can see Loki acting like that doesn't impact him, but I can totally just see Loki a little bit. Being... Yeah, no,
it's just the seven just crowding around him, fucking flaming his shit out of him.
Yeah, that's so funny. Here's the thing. I'm also sitting here comparing the ending of this one because you can't not compare the ending of a Rick Riordan verse book to the other ones, yeah, right? And it is just the most satisfying one to me. Like, I'll even hold it. I like Titans, not Titans Curse. I do like Titans Curse. I like the Lamps Olympian. Yeah. This one just, I don't know, the grandiose feeling, the feeling of hope that it's for Percy leaving camp and not looking back for the first time. Like, that is like more of, I don't know, it's an abstract hope. But even still, that one just bleeds directly into Heroes, and it feels like you can't really talk about the last Olympian without talking about the Blood of Olympus ending. You can't see me with my hands, listeners, but my hands. Whereas the Kane Chronicles ending, the Titans, the Magnus ending, and then the Trials of Apollo endings, I feel like they can all be like, don't yet have that thing.
I guess that's fair. We'll see how it all converges together in this series. And whatever final series he's going to do when he gets to it in a decade, because he's got like six other books to write first.
Dude's busy. He's a busy, busy man. He's doing the things. Good for him. Good for him.
At least.
We'll see.
We'll see. It'll be fun. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Yes. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope this shakeup to the system has been enjoyable. It's, again, us talking about the books all in a row. Very different than what we've done. Also very different.
So we can talk about all the myths when we need to.
Yeah, and then talking about all the book, not chunks of the book, also is very different than how other podcasts structure the book, with obviously Monster Donut excluded, but their episodes are, they record for like 6 hours, gang. I don't know if you know this. I know this.
Sounds like a nightmare.
These incredible women record for 6 hours, and then Phoebe edits that bad boy down. How?
Crazy.
Crazy. Incredible. Couldn't be me. We just sat here for about an hour, and this is roughly all you're going to listen to. Now, I say all this as if I'm acting like, and the next episode, we're going to talk about a myth. No, we're not. We're doing it again, folks.
Nine
from the nine realms. That's the anthology
nine
series.
Nine inch nails.
Because, yes, maybe this is one that in another one we would have talked about a series of the short stories in the bonus feed, but no, because this season is different. We're talking about it here. And is it because it's the only one where anybody goes to Muspelheim and that's a little important? Don't worry about that.
It's the only one where anybody goes to the other nine worlds that we didn't talk about.
Yes.
That we didn't see in these main books.
We literally, it's nine from the nine. Everyone visits all of the realms. And listen, these stories be ass. If you haven't and you like the Magnus ones, these are really good. The audiobook's super fun because every story is narrated by a different person.
That's great.
And that's really cool. So highly recommend the audio version.
That's what I was hoping that they would do with Heroes, but you know. Nah. Sadly, they didn't.
They did not. This one's great. We're going to talk about it next time.
Patreon.com/Muses of Mythology. You better believe it. We are always posting content there. There is just as much content there as there is on the main feed, if not more.
There's way more content.
There's as much bonus episodes.
Yes, and that's just specifically the Bunker 9 bonus episode. That's not also including the Remyth episodes that aren't numbered.
Remyth, Muses movie night.
We got to do movie night.
There's some other content. Musemus, you better believe it. It's happening again this year. It's going to be wonderful.
But
very excited for it.
So yeah, if you want to get more stuff, definitely check out the Patreon. We would love to have you. We always appreciate the support. You can even help us by supporting Patreon. You help us donate to other causes working to create a net good in the world. If you are currently a patron and you have some sort of organization or something you think we should donate to, absolutely, please message us and let us know. We would love to make this more of a community thing rather than just us picking every month. We will be back in your ears on Tuesday, May 7th, to talk about Nine from the Nine Realms. But until then, don't be like Zeus.
Don't be like Zeus.
Muses of Mythology is created and hosted by Darren and DJ Smart. It's edited by Darren Smart. The show is produced by Darren and DJ Smart, as well as
Tim O'Connor, the Crystal Con Man, Nicholas Miller. Our music is Athens Festival by Martin Hay. And our cover art is by Audrey Miller. You can find her on Instagram at BombshellNutshellArt.
Want more Muses of Mythology? Support the show on Patreon. Just $1 gets you exclusive bonus content. Get more at patreon.com/musesofmythology.
You can also support the show by leaving a review at lovethepodcast.com/musesofmythology or tell a friend why you love the show.
Don't forget to check out all of our episodes and episode transcripts at musesofmythology.com.
Thanks for listening.